Quiet on the set no more. Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company. All rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Rising rents will help. This movie studio writes bottom line office buildings were once widely perceived to be on the short road to irrelevance. Now, though, their agonies being relieved, thanks to thriving artificial intelligence. Martin Fridson quiet on the set is not a cry a movie studio landlord likes to hear. The grand soundstages of the MBS Group, owned by Hackman Capital Partners, once hummed with the electric energy of peak Hollywood. For years, quiet on the set meant filming was set to begin. The streaming wars fueled an insatiable demand for content, and Hackman's portfolio, including the historic CBS Television City and its massive acquisition of the former Sony Pictures Animation Campus, was the bustling epicenter. But by 2024, silence didn't precede filming. No, the silence was deafening, a stark metaphor for the financial pain rippling through the industry. The decline started subtly, a ripple from the 2023 strikes, but it became a crashing wave as studios, struggling from a decade of overspending, began slowing down. Hackman Capital, which had bet big on the perpetuity of the streaming boom, was suddenly finding its state-of-the-art facilities running at half capacity. Consider MBS Media Campus in Manhattan Beach, outside Los Angeles, where the massive stages once housed blockbuster franchises. In 2021, this was the home base for the final season of a major Disney Plus tentpole series, with director Jon Favreau orchestrating hundreds of crew members, and producer Kathleen Kennedy frequently seen on set, planning the next phase of the sprawling cinematic universe. The rental income was phenomenal, secured by long-term leases and a constant need for overflow space for visual effects and post-production. By late 2024, MBS' largest stages and studios, previously booked solid for 18 months, were dark. The series had wrapped, and the anticipated immediate follow-up was stalled, not by creative differences, but by a re-evaluation of global content strategy. Hackman Capital's steady, high-margin revenue from this facility evaporated, forcing management to offer aggressive, short-term lease incentives, something unheard of just 2 years prior. The pain extended to the high-profile CBS Television City acquisition. Hackman had purchased the complex, an industry legend, for a reported $750 million in 2018, intending to modernize it for the streaming age. It succeeded wildly. In 2022, actress Zendaya was shooting a much-anticipated drama pilot for a premium cable network on one lot, while across the campus, director Greta Gerwig, below, was prepping a secret feature film. The atmosphere was one of competitive urgency, with every available office and stage snapped up. Now, those same facilities are mostly empty. A major Netflix original movie, which had been slated to start production and had committed to 6 soundstages for 3 months, was suddenly cancelled in a brutal wave of cost-cutting. The space remains empty. For Hackman, the financial model depends on consistent, high-occupancy usage to justify the massive investment and the debt servicing associated with it. When a studio like Netflix pulls a large commitment, the impact on Hackman's quarterly earnings is immediate and painful. The most tangible example of the downturn's financial toll came not just from empty stages, but from the ancillary businesses. The MBS Group includes equipment rental and lighting services, providing everything from cranes to lighting rigs. When actor Leonardo DiCaprio was on location for a high-budget Apple TV Plus movie, a project that required a full city block to be redressed, the demand for MBS equipment was enormous. Today, those same trucks sit idle in the MBS lot. Every idle day is a lost revenue opportunity, directly translating into lower cash flow and increased pressure on Hackman Capital's balance sheet, waiting for the inevitable recovery to begin. And that recovery might now be starting. Hackman Capital is not the only real estate investor struggling to fill stage and studio space following the pandemic and writers and actors strikes. We look at one real estate investment trust this month that has also seen its revenue and profits sag, but that is also seeing light slowly beginning to appear on the horizon. Laying it all down in LA Hudson Pacific Properties, NYSE, HPP, is a publicly traded REIT, real estate investment trust, that owns and leases out office buildings, mostly in the San Francisco Bay Area and nearby Silicon Valley. Additionally, like Hackman Capital, the company owns film studio campuses, 3 in the heart of Hollywood and a 4th nearby in the San Fernando Valley, and a related business providing a range of services to film companies. As of December 31st, Hudson Pacific owned or owned joint venture interests in 13.9 million square feet of offices and the rights to develop an additional 3.2 million square feet of property, 1.7 million square feet of studio properties, including 60 sound stages in Quixote, which provides production-related services to film companies. In 2025, the company generated $831 million in revenue, 87% from office properties rentals, and the remainder from its studio business income. That's a slight decline from the $842 million in 2024. With shares trading around $6, Hudson Pacific has a market cap of about $2.5 billion. Hudson Pacific has come through a difficult five-year period in both of its business sectors. The trading price of its 4.65% unsecured bonds, which we are recommending this month, has partly rebounded from a sharp decline. It's become apparent that the company's prospects have begun to improve. We believe the bonds are very attractive at the current price of $857. How Hudson Pacific came to be. In 2006, West Coast real estate developer Victor Coleman founded Hudson Capital to invest in alternative, not traded, assets such as real estate. In 2007, Hudson purchased the Sunset Gower Studios, a 16-acre campus in the heart of Hollywood with sound stages, production equipment, and office space. Coleman upgraded Sunset Gower's technology and raised rents on its tenant base of movie and television production companies. In 2008, Hudson purchased the Sunset Bronson Studios, formerly Warner Brothers headquarters, with the same game plan. This property also came with zoning rights to build an additional 1.1 million square feet of studio and office space on its 4.4-acre site. In 2017, the company purchased Sunset Las Palmas, another large studio complex in the center of Hollywood. In 2008, Hudson Capital was converted into a REIT and named Hudson Pacific Properties. 2 years later, in 2010, the company raised $577 million in its IPO. HPP used these proceeds to purchase office towers, principally in San Francisco. It used its cash from operations, subject to the requirement that REITs must distribute 90% of their taxable income to avoid corporate-level taxes, to build its portfolio. The company grew much larger in 2015, when it acquired 26 office buildings in Northern California from EQ Office, a large real estate company owned by Blackstone Property Partners. In the years since, the company and Blackstone have participated in numerous joint ventures to purchase and sell properties. Most notably, in 2020, Blackstone bought a 49% interest in Hudson Pacific's three studio properties, which at the time represented 35 stages and 1.2 million square feet of office and support space. The transaction valued Hudson Pacific studio properties at $1.65 billion. Not just studios, Hudson Pacific is mainly about office space. As of December 31st, Hudson Pacific owned 39 office buildings totaling roughly 13.2 million square feet, as well as zoning rights to build an additional 3.2 million square feet of offices. Its buildings are in and around San Francisco, Seattle, above, Los Angeles, and Vancouver, British Columbia. Nearly 80% of Hudson Pacific's office buildings have been built or fully renovated within the last 10 years. This office leasing business accounts for 87% of the company's revenue. Hudson Pacific owns top-tier buildings that draw high-profile tenants. The company's leases have an average remaining life of 4.9 years and fall into three broad-size categories. As of December 31st, the company's top three tenants, Alphabet, Google, Netflix, NFLX, and Amazon, AMZN, accounted for 20.6% of rental income. The top 15 tenants represent 42.7% of Hudson Pacific's rental income. The aftereffects of the COVID-19 pandemic, principally the work-from-home trend that has become more permanent, reduced demand for office space across the country. This long-term decline in occupancy has had two main negative effects on companies like Hudson Pacific. Because of less demand, office rental rates have fallen. Broadly speaking, rents are 10% below pre-pandemic levels. Higher office vacancy rates has led to offering greater incentives for prospective tenants. In 2025, these increased incentives reduced Hudson Pacific's effective rent 19.6%. from $51.53 to $41.41 per square foot. Because of the long duration of office leases, it takes a few years for the full effects of a changing real estate market to show up in a building's operating profits. The trends were negative from 2021 through 2024, when both occupancy and revenue declined, while expenses such as utilities, cleaning, taxes, and insurance rose. While Hudson Pacific's office operating profit appears to have increased in 2025, the figures include a $79 million lease termination fee that was part of the proceeds from a sale of an office building. Without this, operating profit would have declined in 2025. Hudson Pacific did begin to see some signs of improvement in 2025. The pipeline of potential tenants rose 15% and the total square feet office space leased increased 10%. But still, an unusually high percentage of leases, equating to 18% of total rents, expired in 2025. Because of this, its occupancy rate slipped from 78.3% to 76.3%. The lease maturity schedule falls from 2025's 18% to a more manageable 11% in 2026 and to 15% in 2027. Interest from potential tenants continues to increase. In its investor call in February, management projected that the company's occupancy rate for its office portfolio will average 80% to 82% in the current year. Since the company started the year with an occupancy rate of 76.3%, this implies a year-end rate on the order of 82% or 83%. As we discuss in detail shortly, we expect operating profit will increase meaningfully this year. Rents may start rising. There are a few reasons to believe its financial situation is beginning to strengthen. The average rent per square foot in Hudson Pacific's markets will likely increase this year. After a multi-year decline, the market dynamics for office space in San Francisco and in Silicon Valley, which represents 60% of the rental income from Hudson Pacific's office portfolio, began to improve in 2025. In San Francisco, the absorption rate, the square footage of new leases minus the square footage of expiring leases in a particular market, turned positive for the first time since 2019. Much of the new demand came from companies working on some aspect of artificial intelligence, AI. The same AI-led demand is taking place in the Silicon Valley market as well. According to Kidder Matthews, a large West Coast commercial real estate broker, net absorption swung strongly positive, with total net absorption posting a 1.3 million square foot gain in the quarter, versus 200,000 square feet in 3Q25, signaling that occupants are selectively taking down space, often in higher quality assets. The prospects are more muted in Hudson Pacific's smaller markets. The level of leasing activity in Seattle and adjacent areas is picking up, but the vacancy rate remains high, at roughly 25%. The company's management believes Seattle is 18 months behind San Francisco and that AI-related demand will boost that market. Even though the Los Angeles market remains glutted with close to a 30% vacancy rate, Hudson Pacific's properties in that market are 94% leased. How streaming helped Sunset Studios grow over the last decade, Hudson Pacific added aggressively to its portfolio of movie studio campuses as demand for streaming content soared. The company's Sunset Studios division now equates to a total of 1.2 million square feet of entertainment real estate in Hollywood. In 2023, it opened the 230,000 square foot Sunset Glen Oaks facility in the nearby San Fernando Valley. Last year, Sunset Studios accounted for 13% of Hudson Pacific revenue. Sunset Pier 94 Studios in Manhattan opened this year. The complex is jointly owned with the giant asset management firm Blackstone and Vornado, a large real estate firm that provided the land and oversaw construction. In terms of quality and value, Hudson Pacific studio properties are at the high end of the market and feature state-of-the-art equipment, ample adjacent space for production activity, and generous office space. It leases out its sound stages, often for the duration of a television season or series, or of a movie, and provides services to the top tier of branded entertainment. Some of the names include ABC, Paramount Plus, HBO Max, Amazon Studios, Netflix, and Apple TV Plus. Hudson Pacific faces significant competition from studios owned by CineSpace, East End Studios, and Hackman Capital Partners. It also competes against some of its current clients, such as Warner Brothers Discovery, Walt Disney Studios, and Paramount Skydance, which all produce content and control major studio properties. According to the nonprofit organization Film LA, Greater Los Angeles had roughly 6.5 million square feet of soundstage inventory in 2024, with another 3.5 million square feet of proposed soundstage space underway. This additional space has caused occupancy rates to decline. It has also led customers to seek out the most advanced studio properties, which have been gaining market share. According to industry source CoStar News, established hubs that have consistently upgraded themselves, like LA Center Studios downtown and Hudson Pacific Properties' collection of high-end studios in the heart of Hollywood, have remained booked and busy, real estate brokers say. Leasing film equipment, not just film space. The company expanded beyond studio real estate in 2022 when it and Blackstone paid $360 million to acquire Quixote, a service business that rents trucks, cast trailers, lighting equipment, and sound stages to producers of filmed content. The idea behind the purchase was to capture an even greater percentage of the revenue generated by the streaming boom. The entertainment produced by streaming companies such as Netflix and Apple TV Plus, which increased geometrically for many years. Studio and soundstage occupancy rates were around 90% in early 2023. And the strategy worked until March 2023, when writer and actors' strikes ceased all filming and production for at least 6 months. The hiatus caused streaming companies to reevaluate and scale back production plans. Film LA reports that soundstage occupancy is currently in the low minus 60% range, down considerably from the 90% level seen during the booming streaming period about 3 to 5 years ago. Smaller streaming budgets reduce the demand for Sunset Studios and for everything Quixote offers. Unlike the studio business, which generates relatively long-term lease income, Quixote's service business charges by the day for equipment rental and services to film crews. Quixote pays to lease 26 soundstages that it, in turn, sublets to film companies. These obligations represent a significant fixed cost for the business, particularly one that may have little or no revenue on days when there is no film production. Over the past year, Quixote stages operated at 53.3% occupancy rate, far below the 69.1% utilization rate of Hudson Pacific's Hollywood studio properties. Hudson Pacific is evaluating selling Sunset Glen Oaks Studios, which it refers to as a disappointment. The company reports the results of Quixote as part of its studio business. A recent company presentation indicates the business lost $4.6 million in the first 2 months of 2026. If we assume this period was representative of Quixote's ongoing performance, it equates to an annualized loss of $27.6 million. It's not surprising that Hudson reduced the carrying value of its interest in Quixote by $229 million in the quarter that ended December 31. The effects of declining occupancy rates and the losses from Quixote, and likely from Sunset Glen Oaks, has caused the studio segment's operating profit to decline sharply. Hudson Pacific's management is committed to bringing Quixote's business to break even by the end of 2026. Once the business becomes self-sustaining, it will shift from being an anchor weighing down the studio segment's operating profits to an option, perhaps a valuable one, on an eventual increase in demand for Hudson's studio properties. That process is already well underway. According to recent comments by Hudson Pacific CEO Victor Coleman, "We've already made some effective decisions to lower expenses on that business, and there are more to come. Here's why we believe that can happen. The business is asset intense, with over 500 trucks and cast trailers that could be sold individually or in packages. It has no debt, which makes it simpler to sell assets, and the proceeds will bolster liquidity." Management has implied that it is likely to focus on Los Angeles and New York, and close the operations in Atlanta and New Orleans. It's probable that these two markets are responsible for much, perhaps even all, of Quixote's losses. Taking a look at the bottom line, the economic lockdown during the COVID-19 pandemic, remote work, Hollywood strikes, and reduced film production budgets have caused Hudson Pacific's financial performance to decline steadily since 2022. We believe that 2025 will prove to have marked the bottom, and that operating results in 2026 will improve meaningfully. Hudson Pacific's major commercial office markets are showing signs of vitality. Management expects the occupancy rate in its office segment to rise significantly this year. There are early signs that production activity related to film and television entertainment will be higher in 2026 than it was in 2025. The company is expected to cut costs, and therefore boost operating profit. At Quixote, a possible sale of Sunset Glen Oaks Studio, which is less than 10% leased and almost certainly runs at a loss, would provide additional upside potential to operating profit. Note, operating profit in 2025 includes a $79.3 million lease termination fee as part of the payment for the sale of the Element LA office campus. Treating this amount as an extraordinary gain, as we believe is appropriate, reduced operating profit in 2025 to $324 million. As mentioned, management is projecting that Hudson Pacific's occupancy rate will rise to a range of 80% to 82% by the end of 2026, a substantial increase from 76.3% at year-end 2025. This would equate to adding roughly 500,000 to 750,000 square feet to the rent roll. Based on last year's average effective rent of $41.41 per square foot, after accounting for increased incentives, Hudson Pacific's operating income would consequently increase by about $20 million to $30 million. Management disclosed that leases that mature in 2026 are on average $3 per square foot below market rates. If we apply this implied increase to the 11% of leases coming due in 2026 and to 625,000 additional square feet rented, the middle of the range above, it would add another $6 million in revenue. Taking these factors into account, we estimate that Hudson Pacific's operating profit could rise from $324 million, excluding the lease termination fee, to between $360 million and $380 million. This calculation does not include selling Sunset Glen Oaks. Including it would increase the operating profit estimate. Similarly, we do not factor in any improvement in occupancy or rental rate in the studio segment, even though a recent survey by market intelligence firm ProdPro shows production companies expect to increase their output in 2026. In the words of Hudson Pacific CEO Victor Coleman, "We've come through what we would call the 100-year storm, and hopefully, we're coming out of it and may be better off than we think. We're not optimistic yet, but we're at least seeing the positive signs." Significant balance sheet improvement. In 2025, Hudson Pacific took steps to reduce debt and increase its liquidity. In April, the company announced it had closed on a $475 million loan backed by 6 properties. It used almost all of the proceeds to repay a $168 million mortgage and to reduce the balance on its revolving credit loan. In June, the company sold $600 million in newly issued stock over the course of the year. The company sold properties that generated proceeds of roughly $330 million. As a result of these steps, the company ended the year with $934 million of liquidity, made up of $134 million in cash and $795 million available to borrow on its bank revolving credit agreement. As of December 31, Hudson Pacific's debt totaled $2.7 billion, 46% of its $5.8 billion in assets after depreciation and amortization and 35% of its $7.8 billion in assets at cost. We view this debt level as high but manageable. We also note that management has committed to using cash flow from operations and property sales to reduce debt over the next few years. Hudson Pacific's joint venture with global asset manager Blackstone has a $1.1 billion loan backed by its studio properties and 5 associated office buildings coming due in August 2026. The company's share of this debt is $531 million. Given the recent decline in the performance of the studio assets, we expect that the banks may require Hudson Pacific to pay down its share by $100 million to $150 million before refinancing the balance of the loan. The company should be able to do this comfortably given its liquidity of $934 million. Valuation. Real estate professionals typically value office buildings as a function of a property's net operating income, revenue minus operating expenses excluding taxes, interest, and depreciation, in the current or upcoming year. Building value equals current or next year's operating income capitalization rate. For example, imagine an office building that generates $1 million of net operating income. If we use a cap rate of 5%, we arrive at a value of $20 million, $1 million/.05. If instead we use a cap rate of 8%, the value is $12.5 million, $1 million/.08. In other words, the lower the cap rate, the higher the valuation. A recent report by JP Morgan Chase lists the cap rate shown below for Class A office buildings in Hudson Pacific's main cities. The chart displays these rates and lists the percentage of Hudson Pacific's assets in each market by square feet. In practice, the actual cap rate used depends on the quality of the building, its location, and the amount of rent it generates. While these rates are generalized, they should be broadly accurate, especially for a large portfolio of properties. Since capitalization rates can change over time, we apply a range from 7% to 10% to our midpoint 2026 net operating income estimate of $370 million. This range yields a valuation range for HPP's assets of $3.7 billion to $5.3 billion, as compared to HPP's book value after D&A of $5.8 billion. Even the low end of this valuation range provides a comfortable margin over $2.7 billion in debt. Discussion of bond terms. Hudson Pacific Properties 4.65% senior unsecured bond maturing April 1, 2029, is a $500 million issue. In the event of a bankruptcy filing, holders of these bonds would get paid along with all other holders of unsecured debt after secured bonds and bank loans are satisfied. We do not envision a bankruptcy filing in Hudson Pacific's future. As of December 31, the company had roughly $1.05 billion in debt secured by specified properties. Those lenders would be paid first from the value of the properties pledged as collateral. The $1.65 billion in senior unsecured bonds outstanding, including the $500 million of 4.65% bonds, would be paid next. After the unsecured bondholders come $425 million in preferred shareholders. Common stockholders are entitled to all of the remaining value. Risks. Unlike many REITs that seek geographic diversification, Hudson Pacific's portfolio of properties is concentrated in a small number of markets, most notably Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Seattle, making its operations particularly susceptible to changing market dynamics, local regulations, and natural disasters. The company derives a significant portion of its revenue from technology, media, and entertainment companies, which makes Hudson Pacific's results sensitive to changes in demand for space in those industries. Hudson Pacific looks to acquire top-tier office buildings that are underperforming. With the goal of improving operations, this niche limits its set of opportunities. The competition for Hudson Pacific's roster of prestigious tenants is intense to maintain their tax-favored status. REITs are required to distribute 90% of their taxable income. This makes REITs more dependent on new financing than corporations that are able to plow all of their cash flow into new investments. Hudson Pacific has a higher degree of leverage than many competing office REITs, The company therefore could lose out on opportunities to some of its better capitalized competitors' action to take, buy Hudson Pacific Properties, NYSE, HPP 4.65% unsecured bond maturing April 1, 2029, CUSIP number 44409 MAB 2, up to a price of $890, which would equate to an annual yield of roughly 9%, no recession alarm bells. Yet unlike certain other types of investors, distressed debt specialists don't rely heavily on macroeconomic forecasting. A company with a broken business model won't get fixed by a pickup in GDP or a lower CPI number, and an over-indebted one may manage to ride through a rough patch in the economy by refinancing its near-term debt maturities. Another way that distressed debt differs from other asset classes, though, is the wide swings in the size of its opportunity set. For example, in 2013, the ICE Bank of America U.S. Distressed High Yield Index contained 113 issues. The number soared to 561 in 2015, then fell back to 109 in 2017. Over the same span, the ICE Bank of America U.S. Treasury Index's count of issues grew steadily from 242 to 258 with only one down year, by a mere three bonds, in 2015. That particular swing in the number of distressed bonds had a lot to do with a 62% drop in the crude oil price, West Texas Intermediate, between 2013 and 2015 and its subsequent rebound. But many other spikes in the distressed bond count have been associated with recessions. So for investors who are interested in the prospects for future supply of distressed debt, clues to what lies ahead for the economy can be helpful. One useful tool for that purpose is the yield curve, which is the pattern of yields on U.S. Treasury bonds of different maturities. Wall Street focuses most particularly on the relationship between the 2-year and 10-year maturities. When the longer-dated bonds yield more than the shorter-dated ones, it's seen as reflecting an expected economic pickup. The reasoning is that if the economy will be stronger in the future, demand for capital will be greater at that point, so the price of capital, interest rates, will be higher. The opposite case, 2-year treasuries yielding more than 10-year treasuries, is known as an inverted yield curve. U.S. recessions have consistently been preceded by inversions of the curve. Nothing as extreme as that exists at the moment, but since the end of 2025 the yield curve has been flattening, see the graph below. On December 31st, the 10-year Treasury out yielded the 2-year Treasury by 65 basis. By April 9th that differential had contracted to 47 basis points. That's by no means a recession alarm bell, but it's also noteworthy that on March 27th the probability of recession within 1 year, according to economists surveyed by Bloomberg, edged up from 25% to 30%. By both measures, the outlook for GDP is softening rather than strengthening. This doesn't trouble us from the standpoint of our individual distressed recommendations. Our rationales for predicting juicy returns on our selected issues involve industry-specific and company-specific factors, rather than representing bets on broad economic trends. But with just 113 bonds currently included in the distressed index, a number significantly below the median of 150 over the past 25 years, we wouldn't mind if a few more issues crossed over into distressed territory with the help of a moderate economic deceleration. Review of recommendations. With the quarter having just ended on March 31st, very few companies have reported earnings, so the news about our list of recommended bonds and stocks is light. JetBlue potentially seeking a buyer according to digital news organization Semaphore. JetBlue Airways, NASDAQ, JBLU, has consulted advisors to assess whether to sell itself to another airline. Potential acquirers are reported to include United Airlines, UAL, Southwest Airlines, LUV, and Alaska Air, ALK. We believe the Justice Department and the current administration would be more open to airline combinations than the previous administration, when JetBlue's bid to acquire Spirit Aviation, FLYK, was denied. We have long believed that it would be beneficial for both parties if Southwest Airlines were to combine with JetBlue. We continue to recommend buying shares of JetBlue Airways, currently trading at $4.93 per share, up to $7. Xerox names new CEO Xerox Holdings, NASDAQ, XRX, announced that President and COO Louis Pastor would become company CEO. In those roles, Pastor was central to the integration of both the IT Savvy and Lexmark acquisitions. Outgoing CEO Steve Bandrowczak will be leaving the company. The company indicated that it remains on track to deliver its projected operating and financial targets for 2026. We continue to recommend buying Xerox's 3.75% bonds maturing March 15, 2030, currently trading at $255, up to $500 per bond. To see the full list of recommendations, click here. Martin Fridson Porter & Company. Stevenson, Maryland. For important disclosures and disclaimers, please visit our legal disclosures page. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our top 3 best buys, where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find the top 3 best buys under the Best Buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.